Hello, 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 everyone. So, this is take two. I literally just got finished recording this, and you can't even hear me talking. And what is an interview if you can't hear me talking? But we're back. Unorthodox Real is back, and I'm here with a special guest. Nima, please introduce yourself for the second time.
All right. I'm Nima Kebe, first year grad student at Michigan State University with a concentration in lifespan, human development, and family diversity.
Yes, and by grad student, he means he's getting his PhD.
Oh, yeah, getting that PhD. I'm glad about that part. It hasn't hit me yet, so.
Yes, soon to be doctor, okay? But here we are. Rapid fire questions. What is one thing you would put on your bucket list right now?
I would travel to, I guess, country I've been to before. Well, I guess three. So I would say Switzerland. Well, first of all, Switzerland is so expensive. Mm-hmm. Like a Big Mac there would cost you $13.
A Big Mac? Six-piece nugget,
yes. Six-piece nugget would cost you $13. Like, remember, I had dinner at a restaurant one day, and my meal cost me, like, $50. All I got was smoked salmon, like, some type of dessert, and some water.
Oh my gosh. About
water there, like, yeah. It's, but Switzerland is beautiful, but it's so expensive. It's ridiculous. Like, tap water is free here, but, like, in countries like Switzerland, they don't know about that. So, like, if you ask for water, they will bring you a bottle of water. You got to pay for it.
Jeez.
I would also go back to London. I love London. There's so much to do and see there. I don't think you could ever be bored if you go there. There's so much history everywhere. It's crowded and noisy. Kind of reminds me of New York a little bit. Or the layout and the culture and the nightlife. So, you know, you just find something every day that will surprise you. And then I'd also go to Nicaragua. I was there, 10 years ago. Damn. I was there 10 years ago. That seems so long. To go build a school. But Nicaragua is colorful, vibrant, beautiful place. Walk down any street, you'll hear Latin music. People are cheerful. So I'll go back there too.
Wow, those are some good places. So are you a morning or a night person?
I am both. I worked at a sleep lab for 2 years, so I had to adapt. They made me work late hours, then come back to work maybe like 4 hours later. So I worked till like 3 a.m, sleep for 4 hours, wake up at 8, and then repeat for 2 years.
Jeez. So what is one thing that annoys you the most?
People that try to get me to talk, but not during this interview. Just people in general.
Okay. Yeah, Nima, you talking about some people who get you to talk. He's annoyed by me, guys. That's basically what he said.
No. So, like, when I'm, like, going out, okay, when I'm going out, and, you know, just like having a conversation, people are trying to force me to talk. Like, no, you can't make that decision for me. You can't influence my personality, you know. Mm-hmm. It's hard for some people. I don't understand why, but, you know, I don't need to say everything that comes to my mind.
That's right.
Some people, yeah, some people don't feel the need to share everything you're thinking. And that's okay. You know, I'm just private and reserved, and I'm okay with that, but please don't feel the need to give me any input on what's my personality should be.
Yeah.
That's my biggest pet peeve. Like, the hardest part is that perception of my confidence. People think, okay, because he doesn't talk so much, he must be shy, quiet, doesn't know what to talk about. I do. I just like to listen. So that's another pet peeve.
See, that's also very weird that we're friends, because I too am a listener and I hate talking. So it's like, how do we actually have conversations? I don't know, but
you know, I think our conversations are a lot of venting about random stuff.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like those who are quiet, who listen and observe, always have something to say. And
yes,
the thing is, we can't say it to the quote, I guess you could call them extroverts, the people who are always talking, because the thing is, what we'll say will not ever get perceived the way that we would want it to say, because the people who are always talking always talk and they don't listen.
Yes. You know, and the other thing is that, you know, it's not always about knowing exactly, you know, what you want to say, or about being, or about being fascinated by what somebody's saying, you know. I guess sometimes it comes down to simply, you know, being comfortable or willing to listen to the conversation, you know, before you speak, without having a conclusion. Like for me personally, I noticed that, you know, sometime, well, in the past, I would panic just to keep a good conversation flowing. And that would, like, get to me, and, you know, I would over, you know, provide for them. And I feel, you know, that need to, I guess, interject, you know, with each and every story, so I could connect with them. It was too draining for me. So, you know, I also feel like social media kind of accelerates that impatience, because, you know, it encourages you to, I guess, grab at the first thing that comes to your mind and hurl it back for some type of consideration, because everyone wants validation right now. So every single person, you know, doesn't need to know every single thing that's on your story. But, you know, the same thing can happen, you know, when listening, you know, when you're overeager to present your first response, you often neglect, I guess, the importance of the response.
That's real. So what is your lifelong dream?
Lifelong dream? Do I have one? I would just say helping children. All right. So one thing, especially, well, this goes into research also, but I would like to, you know, I guess, explore how children's, I guess, their involvement in their day-to-day decision-making with their parents and their peers affects their development when it comes to independent decision-making and adaptive functioning, and mentor children as well. I feel like mentoring got me where I am today. So that's one of my goals. Yes.
So what new technology do you think will transform the future?
Face recognition. It's big in China right now. I mean, what type of iPhone do you have? Do you have a brand new one?
No, I have an 8 Plus.
Okay, I have an 8 Plus. It's okay. I just had it. I upgraded like 2 months ago.
I mean, honestly, like, even I low-key don't really care to change, because I really like the home button. Like, I just like the home button.
Look, I have the iPhone SE, and I'm not happy right now.
Oh, because you don't have a home button?
Well, no, I have the home button, but I just don't like iPhones right now. I can't do anything about with my phone, so I'm switching back to Android eventually. But
why?
Look, there's just so much you can do with Androids compared to my iPhone.
Go.
Okay, that's my
like
biggest thing.
You sound
control.
Like an African uncle right now. Talking about something. I'm never going to get an iPhone. I hate this. There's so much more you can do with Androids.
Yes, there is, literally.
Okay, what is your favorite song right now?
My favorite song is The Breach, or on the Beach. The Beach by Giveon. Is it an album or is that a mixtape?
I think it was an EP.
Okay, well, the EP,
it had like 6 songs.
Yeah, I love that EP. I played it like every single day for the past 4 weeks.
It's a 10 out of 10.
Yes.
He took his time on that. So, let's get to the meat of the pod, okay? Even though I feel like we've already talked about this before, because we have, but y'all don't know that. But I'm here for transparency. I'm gonna let y'all know this is take two because I'm not perfect and I have no idea what I'm doing. But here we are, and Nima is very gracious enough to let me do this interview again. So, what makes you unorthodox? And obviously, I try to get people on here who I know are already unorthodox. So I expect you to answer this a certain way. So,
all right, yeah. My life story, and I guess how I got into this PhD program.
Yes, let's start with the life story because this is just all unorthodox. So.
Yeah, because I did not see this coming at all. But my parents are Gambian, so I lived in Gambia for about 3 years. Gambia back then was one of the poorest countries in the world. It still is now. It might be the smallest country in Africa. I'm not sure. I think it is, though. But back then, we had a dictator, Yahya Jammeh. He was in power for about 20 years. He just got dethroned maybe 2 years ago. But when I first moved to Gambia, education was pretty easy, because the education there was so bad. When I got there, everything was a breeze. But as soon as I got back to the U.S., life hit me hard. That first week I got back in school, well, I came in the middle of the semester also, and I was in Texas. But that first week I got held back because I didn't know what I was doing. Like, that's how far behind I was. That's how bad the education was in Gambia. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, I got held back. Eventually I moved to Michigan, started off at Henry Ford High School, but had to switch school because I got into so many fights. And then I went to Oak Park High School, graduated from there. During my senior year, I had no idea what I was going to do after I graduated. I knew nothing about college. Only thing I knew was that's a place that people go to after they graduate high school. So I didn't even know what the ACT was the week that I took the test. That's how you know I did poorly on that test. And I mean, I considered myself a smart kid back then too, but I mean, I was taking AP classes like computer science and whatnot, but I didn't know any of these things. So I took the ACT, did poorly. I didn't apply to any schools. I didn't know any schools. Only school I knew about was Oakland University because my friend applied there. So one day my friend asked me to drive up with him to Baker College because he wanted to apply. So I'm like, okay, I'll support you. I get up there, recruiter sees me, he completes my application. So that's how I got into college. Someone finished it for me. And he put me in the automotive technology program. And that was doomed from the start, basically. Interest in that. That first semester, I had a 1.9 GPA. Because I had no interest. Well, yeah. Three things. I knew nothing about automotive technology.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in school at the point. I didn't know how to study. So I would say I probably didn't know how to study until I got to UDM, honestly.
Y'all will hear the trajectory of when he actually made it to UDM. So he'll finish that. So
my first year at Baker, I got that 1.9 GPA. Second semester, like a 2.3. Third semester, I think I had a 1.7 GPA. That third semester hit me hard. But also at the time, I was working full time also. So I was taking the bus to get to school. It'll take me 3 hours to get to school from Oak Park to Auburn Hills. wake up at 5 in the morning, get to school like around 9, get off at 4, take the bus straight to work at Vincetta Garage. yeah. And that was like night shift. So I will get off at like 1 in the morning. So no time to study at all.
So you was Monday just sleeping, going to class, repeat, yes, work.
Repeat. Yeah, that was my life. And then so I guess I had a breaking point. Two things happened. First, somebody stole my books the week of finals on the bus stop, at the bus stop. Mm-hmm. And then maybe like a week later, someone pointed a gun at me. So I'm like, okay, I need to leave Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I moved to Philadelphia. I was in Philadelphia for a while. That was a bad experience also. All I did there was I worked at another restaurant. Mm-hmm. I did prep and dishes. But working for minimum wage, my apartment cost me like $1,000. And it was run down. Didn't even have any AC. Mm-hmm. So all my money pretty much just went to rent. Like all of it.
Jeez.
So I was just working to pay rent, and that was it. So at that point, I said, I can't do this anymore. Let me move back to Michigan and finish school. Mm-hmm. So I went back, transferred to Wayne County Community College, mm-hmm. and I joined the adult program. I don't even know how long that adult program lasted there.
2 years? A year and a half?
Maybe a year. I only joined that adult program because they had money. That was it. I didn't care. I saw $1,000 a month. I'm like, oh, I need that. Okay. I applied for the adult program. I got in, and then eventually transferred to Detroit Mercy.
Begged to for like.
Okay, wait a minute. That's not what happened. I don't know why she tells that story. That is not what happened. Okay, so the plan was that I was going to transfer to Wayne State's Bill program. Okay.
Okay.
But when we got there, first of all, Wayne County lied to us. They told us that if we transferred to Wayne State, they will cover our tuition and give us a stipend mm-hmm. monthly. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So by the time that I wanted to go to UDM, it was too late at that point. So I could stay an extra semester at Wayne County. Mm-hmm. And then I transferred to UDM the semester after that. And then graduated, worked at a sleep lab for about 2 years. And then I applied to Michigan State's Master's Program for Human Development and Family Studies. And I remember during the interview, they asked me, why didn't I apply for the PhD? I told them I didn't think I'll get in. Mm-hmm. And they accepted me for the master's program. And a week later, they told me, hey, we want you in a PhD program. I'm like, oh, okay. And that was a surprise to me because they had more faith in me than I did in myself. So, and
let me talk about how me and Vanessa, if you're hearing this, hey, girl.
Oh, God.
I had to literally beg Nima to accept the PhD, talking about some, I don't want to get a PhD now. I don't think I'm ready. Like, boy, the school, you didn't even have to apply to the whole program and they offered it to you. How many people does that happen to?
Look, it was just a surprise. I'm like, am I ready for this? So, I don't know.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you are because they gave you everything you needed and more, and you didn't even think you did need it at that time.
Yeah, true story.
So, you didn't tell them that you got a bachelor's in psychology.
Oh, yeah. Developmental psychology.
Yeah, okay. So, what made you choose to go down a career path in psych? And choose to focus more so on families.
All right. So I worked at a couple of schools back when I was at Wayne County. I worked at Detroit Leadership Academy, Grand River Academy, and in Detroit International Academy. I also worked in the after school program. So, yeah, I had a class of about 20 students, sixth graders. It was rough. But I would always notice that when their parents came to pick them up, there would always be arguments. They didn't really have any good interactions. And I've always, you know, wanted, I guess, a way to intervene, but I didn't really know how to.
Yeah.
And when I found psychology and the research that they do, I thought that was perfect. So, you know, interested things like, you know, their independent decision making, I guess their adaptive functioning, how that impacts the quality of life. You know, children, adolescents, they have, if they have that positive and adequate engagement, you know, it can drastically change their development and transition into adulthood. So, yeah, my experience with working with children at schools is, I guess, how I got into psychology.
That's definitely different because, like, you know, there's not a lot of Black men in psychology and who focus more so on school psych. So how has mentorship helped you, or kind of, I guess you can even say harmed you, because you may not have had that for your career path?
One thing I'll say, it's hard to, and I'm still searching for a male mentor that's Black and a psychologist, or even one that's close around me. Like, I kind of found one, but that didn't work out. Like, I'm on Instagram, on Twitter, like messaging people every day. Like, I tried to DM one guy. He probably, like, I think he responded like a year and a half later. Like, come on now. Like, but so yeah, it's been hard. It's been hard trying to find a male mentor, but I've had many mentors that are women, and they've been big in my life. Dr. Mesra, she gave me my first chance with research. If it wasn't for her, I really wouldn't be in the PhD program.
Nah, for real. Okay, Dr. Mesra, definitely a game changer. That woman is different. Also, okay, so me and Nima actually worked in the same research lab in undergrad, and we had the same mentor. And Dr. Mesra even asked, I remember she was like, should Nima be on our team? I was like, yeah, like, come on, we don't have any Black men on our team. Let's bring one in, because public health is very female dominated. Yes. And so I know her mentorship definitely helped you.
Yeah, she's the reason I got my job after I graduated, because after I graduated, I was looking for a job for like a good 4 months. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
And then she pointed me to U of M, and I got the job. So shout out to Dr. Mesra.
Yeah.
And then also Kathleen, she was pretty much everyone's mentor. But she helped me out a lot, especially with my, I guess, religion and spirituality. Like, one thing I'll say, I was born into Islam, but I've never really been a religious person. Like, I wouldn't say I hated it, but I just felt like I didn't really feel connected to it. And I always had that struggle, and Kathleen was the only person I could talk to about it. So she kind of, she helped me find my spirituality and how to get that, I guess, connection. So those people have been really big for me. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be where I am now, honestly.
That's real. That's actually really good. So I want to talk a little bit more about how you've dealt with racism in your life or in academia in general, and how you could have potentially gone down the school to prison pipeline, because even your story about how you had to switch schools because you got into a lot of fights is one of the reasons why a lot of students do end up in the school to prison pipeline. So I want you to touch a little bit more on that.
Yeah. So, I would say it first started in elementary school when I got my first taste of it. I was in the classroom. My teacher was a white woman. There's a white male student behind me. I'm sharpening my pencil. Oh, he's pretty close. I pull the pencil out the sharpener. He gets hit with the eraser in the forehead. And he tells the teacher that I tried to stab him in the eye.
Oh, my gosh.
And keep in mind, he had no, like, dents or marks anywhere close to his eye. She just assumed, I'm just going to assume because I was black, I was a troublemaker. So she tried to get me expelled, which didn't work. But they sent me to the special ed section.
Oh, and my gosh.
I was there for the rest of the school year. And that honestly did slow down my process of learning. Eventually, I got to high school. Like my first year, I went to Henry Ford, and I don't know how it is now, but back then Henry Ford was horrible. I know. Well, yeah, this is a big issue in Michigan, but even back then, funding was horrible.
Yeah.
Didn't have any books. Classrooms were overcrowded, and teachers, they didn't want to put up with it, especially the white teachers, because they all had assumptions about black students. But I got into one too many fights in Henry Ford. If I got into another one, I probably would have been expelled. So I went to transferred to Oak Park High School. Didn't really deal with any racism there. But after I graduated from UDM and lived in Ann Arbor, that's when I got the, I guess, more of a taste of it.
Yeah.
I remember, or actually, I even remember I traveled down to Virginia to go interview at.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me this.
Where was it? UVA.
Yes.
So me and other people that were doing interviews, we went to a bar. We're all just getting drinks. Picked this random white guy, just kept staring at me for no reason. So I went and got my drink, and he's still looking at me. I look at him. I said, "Hey, what's up? You don't belong here." Like,
oh. All right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. When I was walking down Main Street in Ann Arbor, this random guy comes up to me, and he's asking me, "Where are you from?" I'm like, "Oh, I live in Ipsy." He said, "No, like, what hood are you from? I know you're not from here. Like, we're in Detroit. I wasn't even born in Detroit." just random stuff like that. And then I think the worst I got, this happened a couple weeks ago when tensions were really high.
Yeah. But,
yeah. I'm going for a walk. 2 minutes into my walk, here's a random white guy across the street yelling at me, "Dumb N-word."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I tried to leave that alone. Walked to maybe like a couple minutes later. There's another white couple. They see me walking towards them. The man grabs the woman's hand, walks across the street, and she apologizes because she knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And I even remember back in high school when I was always walked to school to Oak Park High School. We had a Jewish community.
Oh yeah, there is a large Jewish community in Oak Park.
Yes. And keep in mind, this is me when I was like 14.
Yeah.
And I was a small child back then. Like even back then, the adults would see me. They walk across the street. Then when they pass me, they walk back. The kids, if they saw me come walking down the street, they would run into houses and wait till I leave. So everywhere. That's not even the worst. The worst I got, I forgot about this one. This cop, actually, he got shot across the street from my apartment complex. So it was a black male, of course. He was an adult, and I was a kid at the time. I was still 14. So here come the police, barging in our house. I'm asleep, and I wake up to a shotgun in my face. They put me in cuffs, take me outside because they thought I was one of the suspects. Keep in mind, it was an adult black male, not a child.
And you were 14.
I was 14. They have this thing where they think that, well, they see black children as more mature than white children all
the time. Yeah, there has been studies about that.
Frustrating.
Doesn't make any sense. But to go on with questions, I want to ask, what has influenced you most so far in your life? I know we kind of touched on this before.
Yeah. So I would say, first off, is my mother. She's a pretty strong woman. She went through a lot. She came here alone with me. So she had very little money, no education. So she provided a nice home for my sister and I. So, you know, she taught me how to be loving, how to accept others. And she taught me how to go through tough times. Our president, former president, not the one. No. Barack Obama. But yeah, impressive catalog. Two Ivy League schools, editor of a law review, presidential office. And keep in mind, he had to deal with all of the BS that Bush and Clinton left in the office. So,
yeah,
I said it before. I don't think we'll have a perfect president, but I think he was pretty close to it. Also, forgot to mention Dr. Fauci.
This man,
he should be Times Man of the Year this year, or be a Nobel Peace Prize recipient.
I agree.
Yes, he's already overdue. Yeah, he's already been given the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I think. You know, but he's arguably the great. I think he's doing one of the most meaningful things in his career right now. Because if it wasn't for him, the country would be open up right now. So,
like, all the way open.
Yes, he has saved countless lives right now. And he's a guy who's reached, you know, the highest of career success. Yeah. And he still managed to staff everything good, and that doesn't come out long.
Literally, the other day, I saw on Twitter, people were literally just sharing stories about how they reached out to Dr. Fauci, and he would reply to their emails in like 20-something minutes, in an hour. And I'm like, I know professionals out there who I don't know, who I email, and they'll never get back to me. And it's like, Dr. Fauci, one of the most world-renowned infectious disease doctors at the NIH, can respond that fast. What is your excuse?
What was it? Senior year at UDM, when I thought about applying to schools, I tried to reach out to a school psychologist to get some advice. She just responded 2 days ago.
See, that's that stuff.
In 2 years.
I don't understand. I know some people are like, I'm busy, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, are you really? Like, how busy are you?
No one is that busy.
No one? 2 years?
2 years. And oh, I got the message 2 days ago.
Hey. I'd be tight. Oh my gosh. But what have you learned about yourself during quarantine?
My spending habits are horrible. I've told you this before. But when we first started quarantine, I would go to Target every other day. It didn't matter what was there, what I needed, what I didn't need.
You were one of those people.
Yes. I would spend the money anyways. And then Grubhub is still taking my money, man.
Oh my gosh.
They have that little promo where you spend $100, you get $10 back. The first month and a half, I got $20 back. So I spent at least $200 on Grubhub. And it's a shame because I can cook, okay?
Yeah.
I've worked at 3 restaurants. I know how to cook, and I'm wasting my money.
Where's the sense? Where is the sense?
Oh my God. It's because I'm bored, man. But
that's really it, man. That's really it.
Yeah, and then I've also learned that I'm enjoying the process of exercise. Mm-hmm. When I first saw, I first started exercising because my doctor told me I was pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. She told me this last year. I'm like, okay, let me try to change my diet. But I actually found out that she made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I was never pre-diabetic. So I did all that, I guess, for nothing.
Nothing, cool, sense. Cool. But it's good for your health.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm working out like 4 to 5 days when I first started quarantine. So I pushed myself. Then I worked out for 35 days straight. Did mostly HIIT workouts during the weekday. Yeah. But I hate HIIT now. It's brutal. I don't recommend it for anyone. Because I would do the 1 hour HIIT workouts, not the 30 minute ones.
That's, so 1 hour a lot. Nonstop.
It is a lot. It was brutal. Uh-uh. And then, so yeah, but last week I didn't work out. It was too hot. I think we were like 90 almost every day. Yeah,
every day.
Yeah. So those few things I learned about myself.
So what advice would you give to your younger self with what you know now?
First thing I would say, my guy, please stay in school. you could have saved your time. So you could save yourself so much time and money. Like I could have been at the end of a PhD right now if I think about it.
Yeah, what, you're 28?
Yes.
Yeah, you could have.
Like, I'm young, but I still feel old.
Yeah.
Because 30 is creeping, man. It's right around the corner.
Oh my God.
2 years. Less than 2 years. My birthday is in November.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. But the other thing I would say is no one is great at something that they start at. Mm-hmm. So anyone who does something, they get into that thing because they have interest in it and usually have good taste in it as well. Mm-hmm. But there's always this gap when you start off because no one is usually good at the start unless you're one of those special people. Usually at first, you're not the best at it because you're getting your feet wet. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to get good at it. You have that potential, but you're not there yet. And you have to be careful because, you know, your interest and your taste, that thing can get you to the point that got you to the point for pursuing it. It can bite you in the back. Mm-hmm. Your interest or your taste, you know, for some people, it can be so great that your work will disappoint you because you have so much ambition in that particular thing. So a lot of people never get past that phase and they stop. Some people I know, including myself, you know, we've been through this for years. We know our work doesn't have this special thing that we want to have. And most people go through that. So if you're just starting out, you're still in that phase. You just got to know that, you know, it's normal. And what's one thing you can do right now is just work on your craft.
That's real. That's literally all you can do. So that's literally all that I have for you. Thank you so much for doing this twice, which is so sad. Please tell, you don't really use socials that much, but I'm going to link everything that you could reach Nima on because he's going to want to mentor somebody one day. So if you're listening and you're interested in psych or school psychology, definitely hit his DMs. Make sure you guys follow me on Insta at UnorthodoxRail. Make sure you rate this podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow on Spotify, Heart on Anchor, share with your friends, share with anybody who you think would love to hear this. And I'll catch y'all in the next one. Bye.